This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey, and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, Jenny Murray welcoming you to the Woman's Hour podcast. Good morning. At 8 o'clock today, I told you that Woman's Hour would be a phone-in about being fat and the kind of abuse and discrimination the obese and overweight suffer on a daily basis. The calls and emails have flooded in. One of you said, being fat is the greatest source of heartbreak in my life. The shame is almost unbearable. Another said, I take up too much space. I'm conscious of it every minute of the day. Another, the words fat, lazy and ugly were strung together as a means of verbal abuse. Well, it's clear from what we've heard from you so far that Sophie Hagen, the author of Happy Fat, was not exaggerating when she said fat people get hired less and we get paid less, and her intention is to abolish fat shaming. Well, you can join us on 03700 100 444 to discuss your own feelings about being fat and the kind of discrimination you've had to face. You can also contact us through email, Twitter and Instagram. Let's go first to Mansfield in Nottinghamshire, where Karen is on the line. Karen, good morning.
Morning, Jenny.
What's your point? You said you became overweight when you were an adolescent.
Yeah, up until being about 13, I was just a normal size. And then through puberty, I put a lot of weight on. And I think the thing was that I felt that people had the right to talk about my physical appearance. Well, they felt that they had, because I was fat. So there were always sort of comments about the way that I looked. An example being, I went to see my uncle after not seeing him for a few months. And I walked through the door and he said, oh, you're as broad as you are tall, girl. And it just made me feel not being liked, being stigmatised, really.
Do you have any idea, Karen, of what caused that change in your adolescence where you'd been a normal weight and then it changed?
My body just seemed to explode, really. When I was at school, I can remember making a dress at the beginning of the term. And then by the end of the term, I put so much weight on that I had to put some extra seams in the side and take it out. And the home economics teacher said, oh, it must be middle-aged spread. So I'm not really sure. Perhaps it was just to do with the emotional need to eat more, or I just don't know. But I know that it was a complete change to how I was when I was younger.
And I know you're 65 now.
Yeah.
What's happened recently?
Yeah, I recently, as you get older, you have to go to the doctor to have an NHS check. And I went in for my check, and they take your bloods and weight and blood pressure and everything. And the nurse said to me, she said, you're overweight. She said, do you have a sweet tooth? And I've spent my whole life trying to monitor that I don't put weight on. I weigh myself every day. just because I'm frightened of going back to being the bigger person that I was. I now weigh 9 stone, 12 pounds, and I try to keep below 10 stone. And she said, you know, you're overweight. Have you got a sweet tooth? And I just went home and I just felt all those feelings of insecurity and failure just seemed to come back to me. And I just felt that she had no understanding of the daily struggles that I've had, really, just to feel acceptable now in the skin that I'm in. If that makes sense.
Karen, thank you very much for calling us and starting us off this morning. Let's go to Telford now in Shropshire. And Joe is on the line. Hello, Joe.
Hello there, Jenny.
What's your point?
My point is that I think being overweight is one of the last stigmatisms and last isms for sizeism, if you like, for which we are vilified. Quite rightly, there is an awful lot of support out there for those with eating disorders such as anorexia and an awful lot of sympathy for those. And I totally sympathise with people like that. But the first reaction when people see someone is overweight isn't one of sympathy, it's one of vilification. And how could she let herself get like that, and what a drain on the NHS. And even colleagues and close friends will be, doesn't she look well? And we all know that's a euphemism for, oh, she hasn't lost any weight, or she still looks fat.
But what do you say to people who say, these fat people, they are a drain on the NHS, you know, they do get type 2 diabetes and are a problem? How do you respond to those kind of comments?
My response to that is, well, let's try and look at the cause of why people are fat. Nobody wants to be fat. Nobody wants, well, there may be one or two, I don't know, but I have hated being fat all of my life. And my view is that this is very much linked to mental health, but that fat people are just told, go on a diet. But if it was that easy, we would do that. In the end, I reverted to bariatric surgery and paid for it to have done myself. It took me 10 years to decide to have it done. But having had it done has made me realise that actually being overweight was totally linked to my own mental health, and that having some CBT therapy has made me understand that. And I still have an unhealthy relationship with food, but I can't put the weight on anymore. And that's the reason I can't. So, yes, there is a drain on the NHS, but if we actually looked at the cause of people who are overweight, then actually I think a lot of that drain would disappear. All we're doing is trying to treat the symptoms, treat the fact that people are overweight, but actually not treating the symptoms.
Joe, thank you very much indeed for calling us this morning. We're going to go to Farnham now in Surrey, and Claire's on the line. Hello, Claire.
Good morning, Jenny. Hi.
What's your experience?
I'd like to make a point about women, chastising women, around this obsession about running. I'm a mother of quite young children. I take them to school. I'm 5'8", so I'm about a size 14. And there's a sort of gaggle of women who go out running 6-7 hours a day, all talking about their personal bests, how fast they've run, who's the thinnest. And they often say to me, oh, Claire, why don't you come along with us? And I think, well, actually, I'm okay, thanks. I don't really want to be part of that, and I don't feel that I need to.
But why are they doing it? Is it fear of getting fat that's making them become obsessed with running? What's going on there?
It's often dressed up, Jenny, I think, as a healthy sport, and, you know, we're out running. But all I hear the conversation about is weight. So it's almost like, and everyone says, you know, you look great, you look fabulous, oh wow, that's a fantastic time, well done. And they're all over Facebook and social media. But no one's actually saying, is this an addiction? Is this something you're able to stop? Is this something you're in control of? Or is it something that you just are obsessed with?
Now, you're a psychotherapist. What do you think it is?
Well, I hear lots of addictions in my work, Jenny. You know, alcohol, sex, gambling, people who spend a long time in the gym. And I've also had clients who cannot stop running or cycling. And the reason is they get themselves to a certain point physically, which they're very happy with. Their body dysmorphia, which is the condition that it is sort of rooted in it, is put to one side, and they become obsessed with it. So if they stop running or stop cycling, they're terrified that their weight will then move. So they're almost on this treadmill, so to speak, that they just cannot get off.
Well, Claire, thank you very much indeed for calling us. Our next caller is in York, and it's Les, who is male. Hello, Les.
Good morning. Hope you're okay.
What's your point?
I think, and I've got an example to prove my point, I think, that TV, magazines and media have a massive role to play in this. If you look at TV adverts nowadays, most couples that are on our telly come from this different ethnic background, which is absolutely fine. And that shows that we should be proud of Britain's multicultural society. But advertisers still seem to refuse to use larger people in adverts, which to me, I don't know about other people, is blatant discrimination and they should be challenged. And my example is, after the recent World Athletics Championships, we had a gold medal in the heptathlon and in the sprints. But we also had a very successful shot putter who got to the final, which is quite rare for a British woman thrower, who you would say, because of the job she does and the sport, she needs to be larger. But I bet you she will not be advertising on the telly quicker than the other two ladies, you know, Dean Rasher-Smith and KGT.
What about you, Les? What sort of size are you? Have you suffered from being fat?
Well, lucky or whatever, but I'm quite slim and have never really had a weight problem. I've done a lot of sports because I loved it, and I think I'm just lucky in my metabolism. And another thing, that if you have a drug problem or alcohol problem, they have groups you can go to. But if people want to lose weight, they have to pay £10 a week to go to a Weight Watchers club, which, again, I think is wrong. It's discriminating against people.
Les, thank you very much indeed for calling us. I must just tell you about a tweet that we've had. This came from Rita, and she said, one of my worst stories about being plus size is whilst on an evening out with my husband, a drunk came up to him and said, Christ, mate, you could do better than that. One of her best stories about being plus size was another whilst sitting in my beautiful red sports car in a traffic jam. A young man who was a passenger in the parallel car said, how did you get in a car like that? I responded, by earning a darn sight more money than you ever will. Right, let's go to another caller. Let's go to Farah, who's in Lancashire. Hello, Farah.
Hi, Jenny. Good morning.
What's your experience?
Basically, just wanted to reinforce slightly what the woman yesterday who was on your programme was saying about Asian women, in particular, kind of the stereotype that we have of having to be slim or having sort of fit certain moulds and things. And I think that's a pressure through our lives. I remember when I was really young, when I wasn't thin and I wasn't fat, but I was called chubby. And then after I had my first daughter, I remember my dad saying to someone, she used to be so slim and now look at her. And, you know, now with my own daughter, I'm so conscious that I think she's too thin. And it's very hard in our culture to sort of, I think it's one of the last taboos actually in Asian culture is stopping the body shaming. It's really kind of ingrained and kind of, it's a very strange and kind of a culturally embedded situation. It's not good and it needs to be confronted.
You're now 50. How do you deal with your weight now?
I'm just on a constant diet. I mean, it's just, you know, that sort of menopause or the 10 pounds you couldn't get rid of has turned into 15 or 18 or whatever. And just sort of constantly aware of what I'm eating. But also as you get older, you just get more comfortable with sort of how you look and, you know, who you are. And I think it matters less. But no, I'm on a constant. I can't eat that because, do you know what I mean? Just a sort of awareness.
So it's something you think about every day is what you're eating and whether it's going to make you fat.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think this is embedded in my childhood. And I, you know, I've never been fat, but I've never been thin. And the other thing I just wanted to say was this, you know, using all these antidepressants like quetiapine and mirtazapine and stuff, they really make women put on a lot of weight. And no one's kind of looking at that as an issue.
Have you done that? Have you taken antidepressant?
I have, and it made me, well, it just made me very kind of more unwell mentally and also put on, you know, really pile on a lot of pounds.
Farah, thank you very much indeed for calling us today. We're going to Cambridgeshire now, Ely and Rosalind Ashby. Hello, Rosalind.
Hello, Jenny.
What's your experience?
Well, I had a bit of health scare at the beginning of the year, which was all successfully treated, but it made me think about my lifestyle, and I discovered swimming, and I swim 3, 4, 5 times a week at the moment. I absolutely love it. The only reason I was fat, Jenny, was because I ate too much food and I didn't exercise enough. And I think a lot of people have this problem. They're quite happy to blame other people or blame their glands or blame a medical condition. But the fact is, most people are fat, overweight and unfit because they eat too much and they don't exercise enough.
Were you ever happy when you were fatter?
No.
With the way you look?
Absolutely miserable. It's a constant reminder. It's hard to get out of a chair. It's hard to get in a chair. Clothes shopping was an absolute nightmare for me. Never, ever tried anything on. Couldn't face going into the changing rooms. It is a miserable existence being fat. Now, one of your earlier callers said about the shot putter, you can be quite big and be very fit. What I'm saying is I was unfit and fat. And I think probably they're two very different things. I think as the shot putter is an example of quite a large lady, but I suspect she's incredibly fit.
We heard earlier from, I think it was Jo who said, you know, to lose weight, it's something she has to think about all day, every day. What is she eating? What impact will it have on her? To what extent are you in a similar position now with your eating and your exercise? How much does it obsess your every day?
Well, the fact is, I love food. And if someone's going to cook me a meal, that's even better. I do like food, but I have to take it in control and I have to accept responsibility. Nobody else is putting the food in my mouth. Sorry, I've got a really bad cold. Nobody else is putting the food in my mouth. It's my choice to eat that food and I have to accept the consequences of it. And so I've taken that in under control and I'm heading in the right direction. How I feel, I'm heading in the right direction.
And how much time does your swimming take?
I go swimming for less than an hour a day. It only takes... The first time I went in the pool, I could just about manage 2 lengths. And last week, and this is over about since August, I can now get to 60 lengths.
Wow, 60 lengths, that's a lot.
It is, but honestly, Jenny, it's I can solve all the world's problems while I'm swimming. I could sort Brexit out easily while I'm swimming.
Rosalind.
It clears your mind and it's fantastic.
Rosalind Ashby, thank you very much indeed for your call this morning. Suzanne is in Exeter in Devon. Hello, Suzanne.
Hello.
What's your experience?
Well, I was quite a normal-sized child till I was 8. And then I became fat. I'm one of 5 children. And the others were not. I grew up in the 50s. My eldest brother was a bit plumpy, but we ate exactly the same food. There was no... It wasn't an abundance of Mars bars or bags of sweets. Cakes were made, usually. I do feel that your body is... I stored that fat, and I was very body conscious. I hated games. I didn't want to stand there and not get chosen. I used to smack my body in the bath when I was about 10. I hated it so much. Then I lost weight, but no one noticed. I lost 2 stone. Then Weight Watchers arrived in Exeter, and I lost 4.5, which was brilliant. And since then... I make people laugh. How much have you lost? And I say, oh, must be 20 stone by now, where I've put it on, took it off, you know, because it's just that battle of keeping it off.
So do you yo-yo? Do you diet and then put it on and then diet again?
No, you wouldn't necessarily notice it now because I have kept it down, but I have to watch it like that other lady all the time. Because I could so quickly get back to 16.5 stone. I get fed up with the con. I'm quite surprised at what people say once they know you're a slimmer. They start telling me how to lose weight. And I'm in the winter years of my life and I've got angrier.
What does that mean? How old are you?
I'm 72.
Okay. Now let's call it the autumn of your life, shall we?
That's what your lady said on the phone just now. Yeah, they sort of start saying, oh, you must eat off a smaller plate. It's rubbish. It's what's on the plate, isn't it? And don't eat late at night. A calorie's a calorie, whether you eat them at 4 p.m. or 4 a.m., I think, you know. And then they start to tell me, they look at, if I have a pudding, that's a crime. And I then have to tell them. They get better when I make them laugh, because I say, look, I've earned the right to be called as the expert witness in the court case when it comes to dieting and losing weight. Don't tell me what to do. I'll tell you, you know. And I'm not that good. I've gone up at the moment because it's a struggle.
Do you have the pudding anyway?
Oh, yes, of course I do. Because, you know, I do that lovely one where you get sins, and they are so relaxed. They are very realistic, that club. You go on holiday, you come back, and you say, they say things like, oh, you've only put on 4 pounds. That's jolly good for a fortnight. They're realistic. And their food is meant to be that you don't have to cook a separate meal for your family at night, or you, the family can eat the same food as you.
Suzanne, thank you very much indeed for calling us this morning. This is Woman's Hour, discussing what being fat feels like and how it affects maybe employment, friendships and simply going about day-to-day life. You can join us on 03700 100 444, or you can join us on email, Twitter or Instagram. I'll just give you an Instagram that came in. It really does feel like open season on larger people. This is from Marm C. 1979. This affects both men and women, but women disproportionately. Definitely have suffered discrimination due to my size on the tube, at work and other places. Let's go to the phone again now, and we're going to West Wales, and Brij is on the line. Hello, Brij.
Hello, Jenny.
What's your experience?
What the things I wanted to say was that obesity is a really ugly word for a disease. It just it holds in it the shame, but it is a horrible word. And I had a consultant who put it at the top of every letter. He was treating me for my heart, not my obesity, but he sent me to a Mars bar every time I read it. And the second point I wanted to make was that if the shaming and the slimming industry and the medical industry was working, there would be no fat people left. The fact is that the slimming industry and the diet industry are based on the same methods that fatten cattle.
You described obesity, a word to which you have an objection, but you described it as a disease. Why?
Well, I'm not. I have heard it called a disease, and it is treated like a disease by the doctors, and it has health. You know, it has all sorts of side effects, or at least so we're led to believe. The thing is that being fat can have all sorts of reasons other than eating wrongly and not exercising.
How's your heart now? Have they managed to fix the heart problem?
No, it's unfixable. It's cardiomyopathy, and I was born with it, and I will die early with it. And it stops me exercising as much as I would like, and the medication adds weight. So I'm up the proverbial creek in that respect. But I read fat is a feminist issue years ago, and I stopped dieting and I stopped putting on weight. And I'll never be the size I would like to be. I will always have body dysmorphia, but at least I won't be, you know, I won't be putting on any more weight.
Well,
the other thing that happened, I got seriously ill last year and I lost 14 kilos and nobody noticed. And nobody, you know, whereas a friend of mine who was thin and lost weight when she was ill was worried about starving to death.
Well,
so
Brij,
there are actually positive things about being fat.
Brij, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. We're off to Devon now. Catherine's on the phone. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Jenny.
You've been verbally abused in the street. What happened?
Well, last week I was coming out of the public library and going back to my car. And as you do in a car park where the two cars are parked quite closely together, I had to kind of squeeze past the car next to me. And I opened my door and I looked to my side, and the man sitting in the car was mouthing something at me. And I thought, he cannot possibly be saying what I think he's saying to me. And so I kind of indicated to him that I couldn't hear him, and so he rolled down the window. And then for about probably less than five minutes, there was just a complete litany of abuse, using the worst possible words that you could think of in relation to a woman. And if you think of all the bad ones, those were the ones he used. And I kind of just stood there in shock. And I said to him, you know, do you not think that that is being very rude? And I thought that might at least stop him in his tracks. But what in fact happened was that it got worse, and he just kept on swearing and swearing and swearing at me. And it was just incredibly shocking.
And it was somebody you didn't know? Just a complete stranger?
No, not at all. I think he watched me kind of squeeze between the two side mirrors of our cars and then open my door. I didn't bang his car or anything like that. And he obviously, well, in all honesty, the way he was behaving, it seemed like he was slightly unhinged. But it was such an incredibly bizarre thing, and such a hurtful thing to have somebody refer to your size and then all of the other swear words associated with that, and feel that it was okay to say that just because I'd had to squeeze between two cars.
Apart from talking to us, have you spoken to anybody else about it?
Well, I have actually asked the people who run the library whether or not they have CCTV cameras, because I am considering raising it with the police as an abusive incident, because it was so shocking. I would just hate to let it go and for that gentleman to feel that it was acceptable.
Catherine, thank you very much indeed for calling us this morning. Kelly Ford is on the line now. She's in East London. Hello, Kelly.
Good morning, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. What's your experience?
Well, my experience is, at 8 years old, I was 8 stone, and I was always pacified with food. So I've always been an emotional eater. So if there's ever been a crisis, I'll always reach for a Turkish delight or other food to kind of pacify me. And, you know, over time, I think I've always kind of been, affected by being bullied very young, being called Tonka Truck, and being bullied for being fat. And I never forget sort of a light bulb moment whilst doing an assault course with some friends. We were canyoning, and I never forget sort of a friend turning around saying, well, this isn't really you, is it? Because, you know, you're overweight. And I remember never forget thinking, this is the trigger. This is the moment where I can prove that even though I'm a size 16, I can do anything. And from that point, I went on and I did a 5K, and I was like, oh, I ran for 30 minutes. I actually achieved that, even with a big, you know, big booty and swaying hips. And went on to do a 10K, and then I was like, oh, I've got a real fever for this. And that then turned into a half marathon. Yeah, 3 peaks were done, managed to do a full marathon. And this was all as a size 14, size 16 woman. And I just feel like, to love the skin you're in, you know, there's a massive movement out there of body positivity and celebrating your body as it is. But actually, it's still very much celebrated in social situations of, oh, you look great, you've lost weight, or, oh, you look fantastic, you're looking skinny. And whenever I hear things like that, it definitely gives a trigger to that 8-year-old girl fat in the playground. And so I think by being fit and using fitness as a tool to feel good in myself and feel confident, not so much to anymore lose weight. Once upon a time, I may have done fitness to kind of lose weight, but now I do it to feel good. And actually, that's a really important example, I feel, to myself, my friends, and my little girl as well, on how to kind of be just confident in the skin you're in. You know, I've only been skinny once, Jenny, and I lost my sense of rhythm. So I don't really fancy doing that again.
Well, Kelly, thank you very much indeed for calling us this morning. I think we're going to Bath next, where Stella's on the line. Hello, Stella.
Hiya.
Hello. What's your experience?
So I'm someone who has recovered from various eating disorders, and I now work with people with eating disorders. And I think there's a real misunderstanding of binge eating disorder, which does lead, obviously, to people being overweight. And it's people just say, oh, you can stop eating, like you can like watch what you eat and all of that sort of stuff. But binge eating disorder leads you to eat until you're physically uncomfortably full. And I'm somebody who's recovered from it. And I know that in that sort of space, it's not as easy as just saying, oh, well, I will put that down, or well, I will stop that, because it's an emotional hunger that drives you to until it's painful, really.
So was your eating disorder binge eating?
So I had anorexia, and then that developed into bulimia, which then developed into binge eating disorder. And also, obviously, on the recovering from anorexia, it's terrifying to hear people being vilified for being overweight, because that is your biggest fear. Your biggest fear is that you are going to be fat and you are going to be unacceptable.
How old are you now, Stella?
I'm 28.
And how did you recover from it?
So I spent a lot of time in hospital for my anorexia, and then came out, and that was when the sort of real hard work started. And unfortunately, at that point, there was no support from the NHS as an outpatient, and because my weight was at a certain level. And then when I had binge eating disorder, I went to my doctors and asked for help. But unfortunately, because my weight was slightly at the top end of what they would be okay with, I wasn't offered any help at that point. And so that was just a case of, it was really, really difficult, but trying lots of different methods. I eventually found a few that worked for me when I was feeling the urge to binge to stop me doing it. But it is incredibly difficult, and people just don't understand it at all.
Stella, thank you very much indeed for calling us. We're going to go to York now. Elizabeth is on the phone. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
What's your experience of this?
I'm at home at the moment recovering from a total knee replacement, which I had to pay £10,630 for.
Ouch, on both counts. That's a lot of money, and the knee must have been very painful.
It still is. this is because our local CCG, which is the Clinical Commissioning Group, are in debt and have decided that one way to save money is to say that anybody that is overweight or is a smoker, that's the other group, overweight or a smoker, is not allowed to have joint surgery. So that's hips and knees.
So I think the limit you said was a BMI of 30. What was yours when you felt you needed the hip replacement?
Well, in fact, it has gone up and up and up, because what I had was called a fixed flexion deformity, which meant my leg was not only fixed but in a funny angle, so that I couldn't walk very well at all, which meant any kind of exercise or fitness program was very, very difficult. So my weight just went up and up and up, and it was just a vicious circle.
And you said it's painful now. How easily are you using it?
Well, I'm literally just a week after surgery, so that's why it's painful at the moment. But, I use walking aids and have done, but I've got another knee that's having trouble and a hip as well. And I have osteoarthritis, and you sort of feel, well, it's not my fault that I've got osteoarthritis, but we're being penalised for the state we're in.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for calling us, and I do hope it all gets resolved. Rebecca Atkinson-Lord is on the line now. She's in London. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi. Hi.
What's your experience of this?
So I've been fat since I was 10, and I've had all of the horrible stuff. I've been shouted at in the street. I've had
mostly men actually say horrible things. And I've had women do that horrible, insidious thing where they advise you how to be a better woman. And the thing is, you know what? I'm a size 22. I don't care. I'm really happy. I'm in a happy polyamorous marriage. So I have a gorgeous husband and I have two other really brilliant, gorgeous, successful boyfriends. I have a career that I love. I don't spend my life feeling fat and ugly. And if other people see me as that, that is their problem, not mine. And I think it's really important that there are examples of women who are fat and are happy out there for people to see. So I sort of wanted to call in just to redress that balance.
But do you have any idea how you have managed to cope with that when so many people that we've heard from this morning and, you know, lots of people you hear from outside who are really not happy to be fat and yeah. spend their lives dieting? What's different about you?
I'm really bloody minded. And I look at, sorry, I shouldn't swear, but I look at my friends who are thin and who worry about their body and their appearance about as much as I do. And I sort of realise that I can either spend my life hating myself or I can live it. And it is just a question, I think, of deciding not to allow that stuff in and talking yourself into not listening when you have to. And you know, everybody, I have had times in the past when someone said something awful to me in the street and it floored me. But I am angry at that person for abusing me just as I would be if I was a black woman and they had shouted racial abuse. And they are abusing me for an outside appearance that I am not actually capable of changing, I don't believe. So why, you know, why let that shape my life? That lets them win.
Rebecca, thank you yeah. so much for joining us this morning. We'll go now to Westbury in Wiltshire. And Michelle is on the line. Hello, Michelle.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hello. What did you have to say this morning?
Well, I've just got a story a bit more hopeful or a little bit more positive, in my case anyway. I struggled with my weight as I got older, especially through menopause as well. I'm currently 51. Last year I turned 50 and found a gut health program that helped me to feel so much better overall, not just about my weight loss and how I looked and felt, but, you know, my health as well, overall health. So I just wanted to say that there is hope and light at the end of the tunnel, really.
Gut health. What is that all about?
So just eating gut healthy foods that repair your gut, restore your gut health. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say still that I don't know that much about the workings of it, but I knew nothing of how important gut health is to your overall health and well-being prior to this. But they call it your second brain. They call your gut your second brain, and it affects so much to do with mood, sleep, weight, everything.
And you're feeling much better as a result.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've lost over 3 stone. My joints, my health, my happiness, everything. Better than I was in my 30s.
Michelle, thank you very much indeed for telling us what you've tried. Thanks for calling us. Let's go now to Diane Westerby Brooks, who's in Woking. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for letting me be on the programme. I've identified with so much people have said. I'd like to just say I'm 67, but it could be yesterday that when I was a teenager and one of the neighbours said to me in front of my mother, how much fatter are you going to get? I can still remember the pain of your legs rubbing together, because when you are really overweight, you have to wear these long pants or whatever you want to call them to stop the pain, the rawness of your legs rubbing together. I was
comforted. So, you said that someone insulted you when you were very young. Has that continued as you got older?
No, because when I was 16, I went to Weight Watchers and lost 5 stone in a year. I did put some of it back on, but I did take it off again, and I've been the same weight now for 45 years, and I've had 4 pregnancies. I can remember in one of my first pregnancies saying to the nurse, I'm really concerned about putting on weight, and I heard her say that to the doctor behind the curtain, and the doctor said, unless she's the size of a house, I'm not interested in speaking to her. So these things resonate over the years. But I'm 67 now. I've managed to learn to control it. Like some of your listeners said,
It's, you've got to educate yourself, you've got to take up exercise, you've got to learn and not buy the stuff that's in the shops, because a lot of it is absolute rubbish, you know, produced by manufacturers. But I want to say to the people on this program, you need to think of the future. Because my friends who have got weight issues, they've had these replacement knees, terrible pain, diabetes, their legs cut off, going blind with the diabetes. Whatever you think about what you are now when you're fat, please try and look the 10, 20, 30, 40 years ahead, because you will pay for it, I'm afraid. There is no way out with being overweight. You will pay for it.
We need to point out that you're talking about type 2 diabetes. Type 1 is not caused by lifestyle. Type 2 diabetes, you're right, can be caused by being overweight and lifestyle. Thank you very much indeed, Diane, for calling us this morning. Let's go now to Mary, who, again, is in the London area. Hello, Mary. Mary Whiting.
Hello there.
What's your point?
Hello there. Yes, something that hasn't been mentioned in the programme, I think, so far, on anger. I think we should not be directing any anger we feel at individuals, but absolutely fairly and squarely at the food industry, who've stuffed us with sugar for decades and have got clean away with it. No government has taken the food industry on. They haven't reined them in. They've just let them get away with it and do what they like.
There have obviously been attempts, policies recently, to try and reduce sugar. What's your position? What's your diet, your size? How do you cope with it?
I was a skinny child and I've always stayed fairly skinny. But I got very interested in healthy eating several decades ago. I've eat virtually no sugar. You can't avoid it entirely. If you're on somebody else's house, you eat what you're given, and it's nice to have a dessert in a restaurant sometimes. But at home, pudding is fruit. I make all my own bread because I don't like the bought stuff, and that tends to be wholemeal. I buy brown rice, brown pasta, which are fine. The rice is easier to cook. It doesn't stick, and so on and so on. So we do eat very well, and we are fine. I used to teach cooking to adults for fun on this sort of thing.
Well, Mary, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Let's go to Mike now. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I don't know where you are. You haven't told us, but never mind.
Northern
What's
England.
Your point?
I'm married to a woman who is in the obese area on the size to weight graph. She is struggling very hard to get her weight down. She goes to Slimming World. I've been with her, and I've lost a couple of stone as well. I feel great about that. But how can I best support her and make her feel better about herself?
How do you think you can support her and make better about herself? Never criticise her, maybe, for being fat?
Never. Never.
Well,
never
Mike...
criticise. Always encourage.
Mike, thank you very much. I think we can just squeeze in Brenda, who's in London. Hello, Brenda.
Hello, Jenny. Good morning.
Thanks Good morning.
For having me here.
What's your experience?
My experience is that really resonates with virtually what's been said, but I want to underline a couple of things that other people haven't said yet, and that is, it's really being overweight is a mindset issue. I know that from experience. I lost virtually every member of my immediate family by my younger sister within a very short period of time. And I'd been a corporate slave. I used to sit at my desk and I used to work 16 to 18 hours per day running a very busy children's services. So you can imagine, I just put on weight. I used to eat badly. I used to eat late at night. I didn't exercise. So I want to underline, just get one bit of self-care per day. I think most of us, we overwhelm and try and do everything and trying to do too much. Even if you just move more.
Well, thank you for all your calls, tweets and emails this morning. Here are a few more. Lynn Rafferty said in a tweet, "It's the denial of access to healthcare that I hate most. Whatever symptoms present, the answer's always the same." On email, Gail said, "I don't think fat should be acceptable. It is unhealthy. We all have a responsibility to look after ourselves and not get ill unnecessarily. I'm slightly overweight, but working hard to deal with it. Accepting fat just means people are eating too much. You literally cannot be fat if you don't eat and drink too much. Polly said, I fully sympathise with women who struggle with their weight, and I think it's great that you're covering this on your programme. However, as a naturally thin woman, I get extremely frustrated when I see posts on social media about how real women have curves, as though us skinny ones are not feminine enough. Negative body image is not just something that overweight women struggle with. Thin women are stigmatised too. Someone who didn't want us to use a name said, how is anybody with an eating problem supposed to manage their compulsion when we now live in a snacking culture where people hardly eat at the table together anymore, advertisers offer snack foods to tide you over. Even in a restaurant while waiting for your meal, a waiter will offer to bring snacks while you're waiting, as if being hungry in between meals was somehow unbearable. We need to come together and enjoy making and eating our food without distractions like sitting in front of your TV or PC. Emma said, last year, through a combination of hip surgery and stress, I lost 6 stones in a period of 5 months. I didn't diet, the weight just dropped off. I completely changed shape. It's as if someone suctioned my insides out. My blood pressure was 220 over 115 before I lost weight. It's not dropped much since, so it's not weight related, it's stress related, and I'm on medication for life. I'm now a size 6 to 8. I was previously 16 to 18. My friends think I'm too skinny. Someone even said, you were much funnier when you were fat. It's a lose-lose situation, particularly for my bank balance, as I've had to buy absolutely everything new, including shoes. Liz said, I'm finding the discussion a bit irritating as there is an assumption that people want to lose weight. I, like many others, put on weight as an adolescent and have lost 5 stone at least 3 times in my life, divorce and Weight Watchers being 2 ways I lost that weight. The last time I lost a lot of weight, my daughter ended up seriously ill with anorexia. This was 5 years ago. I put on tons of weight, getting her back to a reasonable weight, as we all ate together. Now I exercise regularly and am reasonably fit, but still would be classified as obese. Bridget said, at the age of 61, after 20 years of caring and being in a full-time job, I took the plunge and had bariatric surgery. Not because I was unhappy with my size or because I had joint issues, but because I could see myself suffering later in life. After the surgery, I halved my weight to 13 stone. People who hadn't seen me for a long time didn't like to comment on my appearance because they thought I'd had cancer. I still feel guilty that I had to have surgery and that I did not have the self-control since the age of 12 to do it the proper way, by dieting. I still weigh about 13 stone, but I'm not neurotic about it. Carmel said, I'm a 59-year-old woman and have been overweight since I was 11. I would be classed as clinically obese. I've never lost more than 0.5 stone in my life, and that was for my 21st birthday party. It's been a great source of shame to me, as I don't think I have any willpower. I weigh myself every day, and every day I say to myself, I will be good today, but I love food. It's been the most reliable source of pleasure and comfort I've had in my life. So, on balance, I think I have to accept the way I am. Society, in guises of concern for health and acceptable appearance, persecutes the overweight, but I'm fighting back by just being myself and trying to accept myself. Again, someone who didn't want us to use a name said, I've been listening with interest to all the brave callers to your programme this morning. I've always had body image issues. In my 20s, I took slimming pills, even though I was only a size 10. Over the decades, I yo-yoed and owned clothes in 4 different dress sizes at the same time. I've tried many different weight loss programs, all involving specially branded food, subscriptions, or meal replacements. None of these were sustainable for me. 20 months ago, I adopted a food lifestyle choice, not a diet. I'm over 50 pounds lighter and almost at my goal weight. I've done this by ignoring the standard nutritional guidelines, and I follow a low-carb, high-fat eating regime. I've discovered that obesity is caused by insulin resistance once this has been reset by cutting carbohydrates, eating good, natural, unprocessed food, and fasting. The body can begin to heal. This is not a heavily promoted lifestyle, is there? There's no money to be made from it. Tomorrow, Linda Bostrom Norsgaard's second novel, Welcome to America, has been awarded the prestigious Swedish August Prize. It portrays a sensitive, strong-willed child in the throes of trauma. Linda will join me to talk about silence, trauma, childhood, mental illness, and imploding families. And Natalie Smith from Surrogacy UK will discuss proposed changes to the surrogacy law. Join me tomorrow, if you can, 2 minutes past ten. Until then, bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Alistair Souk, and I want to tell you about The Way I See It, a brand new podcast from BBC Radio 3. It's a 30-part series in which we're throwing open the collection at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, to some of the sharpest creative minds of our time. We'll be speaking to comedian Steve Martin, writer Roxane Gay, musician Steve Reich, and many, many more. I'll be your guide throughout the series, so join me as I explore one of the greatest collections of modern art in the world. If you'd like to hear more, just search for The Way I See It on BBC Sounds.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.